Welcome to WBOI Presents. I'm WBOI intern Brittany Smith. Our first story comes from Zach Niels, and he was introduced by Ben Larson. Thank you for listening.
Our first storyteller tonight is making his trapdoor debut. We're very excited to have him. He did ask me to let you all know that he is not homeless. If you offer him money, it will just be normal generosity. Anyway, we are very excited to have him on the show. He came to us with a very lively story, and we're excited for it to go down, and we think you will be too as soon as he gets up here. Please welcome to the stage Mr. Zach Niels.
It is amazing to be up here. I have seen these shows for many years, so it is a great opportunity, and I am so thankful that all of you are here. So thank you so much for coming out tonight. But we're going to go back in time, far, far back time. It's the year 1994. During that year, I was told two things. Number one, Warren G told me I was supposed to regulate. And number two, Urge Overkill reminded me that soon I would be a woman. So as you can assume, I was very conflicted. But this time, 1994, I'm a 7-year-old child. I am in first grade in a small town called Erie, Illinois. Now you may ask yourself, where is Erie, Illinois? And I will tell you, as someone who lived there for 8 years, I still don't know. I can also still tell you that most of the time when people ask, what can I tell them about it? I can say, it's not Erie, Pennsylvania. That's the big positive. So when I'm 7 years old in first grade, my teacher says to my mom these words, your son will never be a contributing member of society, and he will spend his entire adult life in jail. Mind you, I'm 7. I'm not saying I'm doing heinous shit, but if you were to look at it, I could have been a Tasmanian devil of arms and flailing words. And yet my teacher took the time out of her day to let my mom know that, hey, just give you a heads up. He's gonna be on the news. But I can say that when I was 7 years old, I remember laying on the floor of my mom's bedroom, and on her TV stand, there was a collection of books. My mother is a genius. She's in Mensa. She has a PhD in psychology. This woman should know everything that's going on in my brain. Yet I still remember there was a book sitting there that said, Teaching and Parenting a Strong-Willed Child. Some of you might remember that, because you probably bought it for your kid. And most of the time, you're like, he's just strong-willed. What's that? So you may ask the question, what is a strong-willed child? There's four major tenets that I always remember. Outspoken. Always asks why. Will throw a tantrum if they don't get their way. And is consistently fighting even when they know they're wrong. The amazing thing is, who knew I was just training to be a president of the United States? So when we go back to this time, when I'm 7 years old, there is one thing that I always craved. I always wanted attention. I wanted everyone's eyes on me. Potentially why I'm standing on this stage. But I wanted to be that focal point. I wanted to be the one to make the joke. I wanted to be the get one in trouble so I could just be like, what you gonna do about it? But there was a time. We were getting ready for Thanksgiving. Time, not so different than right now. My teacher came to me and said, Zach, you know what? You're going to be the narrator of the Thanksgiving play. I said, really? You're going to... me? She said, yes. You tried out. We thought you were fine. Despite our better judgment, you will be the narrator. Now, I love to be the focal point. I love to have all that attention. So, of course, what's the thing that I think of? This is my opportunity. This is my chance to finally get onto the silver screen. I could finally be a corpse in the background of a Law and Order episode. Dreams are about to come true. But what do I do? What do you think I do? Any guesses? Silence. I acted out. There's that thing that they'd like to talk about, that there's that voice in the back of your head that always tries to get you to be on the straight and narrow, make sure that you want to do the right thing. Mine was a little different. Mine had that great voice that would just kind of command you to be the worst version of yourself. This was the voice in my head that said, hey, you invented this game called Rollerball, a great mashup of rollerblading and basketball, but nobody understands your genius. You will play by yourself until they pull you off that court. And me, at 7 years old, went, okay, sounds good to me. When I was still 7 years old at Fenton Elementary School, a voice said to me,
hey, buddy, you see that giant bush?
Yeah, disembodied head in the back of my brain.
Shove a kid into it.
Oh, I don't know.
I said, shove a kid into it.
Well, I mean, if you're talking to me, you must know best. And that child disappeared into that bush. And my brain went,
yeah. That's right. That's what I wanted to see.
So you can imagine, that little voice in the back of my head just kind of pervaded most of what went on in my life. So it came time. This play was going to happen. We're sitting around the classroom. Kids were getting all excited. They're all dressed up. Parents were going to be coming. And this little girl says, I think I lost my tooth. Thank you. I think I lost my tooth. Well, honey, said Sherry Coates, my first grade teacher. You can write that down. Oh, they said I should be anonymous, so her name was Sherry Coates. She goes, well, honey, where do you think you lost it? I think I was sitting on the couch. Well, why don't we go take a look? And suddenly something happened right about here where the bald spot is.
Hey, why don't you say you threw that tooth away?
What?
Say it was a piece of paper. You threw the tooth away.
I don't think I want to do it.
Look, we're not going to have this conversation forever. You threw the tooth away.
Mrs. Coates, I think I know what happened to it. Well, what happened to it? I threw it away. And then suddenly, my world changed for a very, very fast moment. She said, you did what? Now my brain's saying you have to double down. You have to stand by that lie, no matter how ridiculous it is. Yeah, I threw that tooth away. What are you gonna do about it? Teeth are stupid anyways. Well, Zach, great news, because you know what? You're not gonna get to be in the play anymore. What? You're going to stay here while we all go do the play without you. I don't get to be in the play anymore? My chance at being Jerry Orbach's sidekick for just like one episode is gone? I don't get to stare at the beautiful face of Benjamin Bratt? You're going to stay here, and you're not going to come out. You're going to wait until we're done. So they leave. 15 kids all walk out the room. As the teacher turns, she flips the light, shuts the door. This 7-year-old has been left alone in his first grade room. Being left in the dark is a very crazy feeling, isn't it? Especially when you're a kid, you didn't want to be left in the dark. You needed a nightlight. You need to leave the hallway light. You need the door cracked just so you could hear your parents talking. Yet now I'm left in this absolutely silent and dim room. So I get underneath my desk, and I start rocking back and forth, and I go, no, I was supposed to be in the play. I'm rocking back and forth, tears streaming down my face, snot coming out of my nose.
I was supposed to be in the play.
Not a sexy cry. That kind of cry where you're like, breathe. Oh, God, just breathe. My body is heaving. I don't know what to do. I'm in the middle of a panic attack. And then suddenly there is this voice.
That's your play.
No, she said I couldn't be in the play.
That's your play.
No, I was supposed to be the narrator. She said I couldn't be the narrator anymore. I'm supposed to stay right here.
Of that.
You know what? You're right. This is my play. I'm the narrator. I control the destiny of the words on that page. So I get out underneath my desk. In the middle of my heaving, crying, snot, body writhing, walking down the hall going, it was supposed to be me! That's my play! I walk into a library filled with 15 kids, 30 parents, and my teacher. And suddenly, what was happening on that stage is no longer as interesting as what's coming down that hall. I get to that door frame, and now everybody's eyes are on me.
I'm supposed to be here! My play!
So what do? I was the narrator. A boy by the name of Andrew was given the task of being the new narrator. Suddenly, he no longer had a microphone put in front of him. Because this chubby kid ran right in front of him going, no!
When the Native Americans came and they wanted to sit down and have dinner with all the new Americans,
get off me!
This is my play, this is my play, I swear to God. Okay, can we start over? Can we go back?
Now you imagine this sight. You imagine this teacher that's pretty much had enough of me. She's standing there in a floor-length blue dress. That beautiful vintage 1980s shoulder-mounted camcorder with the giant VHS tapes in one arm. And she's watching as suddenly this child that she has already told is just going to be a criminal for his adult career has taken over the show. And not in a positive way. Not tap dancing, not singing, screaming at the top of his lungs while crying. So what does she do? Does she walk over and casually say, hey, buddy, let's not do this, okay? Not right now. No. Does she walk over, she'd give me a big hug and say, it's okay.
It's okay, Slugger. It'll be fine.
No. She walks up and puts me into a headlock. I'm happy you're laughing, because at the time, it was much more traumatic. She grabs a 7-year-old. Now, mind you, she's got a video camera in one hand, and now a small child in the other. And she drags me back to the same spot I was supposed to be in, while all I'm doing is crying, snot coming off the every orifice of my mouth. And she keeps filming. She doesn't stop the show. She doesn't casually tell everybody it's okay. She goes, it's fine! So now my face is crushed into this blue dress. Tears, snot, stains, kind of like Bill Clinton's blue dress. And I stayed there the entire show. My face smashed into the side of this, and you can hear my voice on the video. Me crying out, me just asking to be let go, and her squeezing tighter on my head. My mother gets a phone call. Says, Mrs. Niels, you need to pay for my dry cleaning. Okay. Why? Well, your son stained it. Stained it. Mm-hmm. That's what happened. How exactly did he stain it? Well, you know, he got like tears and snot and, you know, stuff. Why were his tears on your? Were you, like, consoling him? You know, in a way. What happened?
Well, you know, we were doing the play and he did something that he wasn't supposed to do and he wasn't supposed to be in the play anymore.
Okay, so he cried when he was upset.
You know, he came in and I kind of put him in a headlock.
Wait, what? You put my son into a headlock. You're 43 years old. You couldn't have figured out a better route to maybe console this child?
Well, you know, it was heat of the moment kind of thing.
My mother goes to the school board. She asks a couple people, she goes, you know, what would you do in this situation? And you know what they all said? Get a lawyer. You know, you could have her job if you got a lawyer. I was thinking a little bit grander. I could have my own school. I could always be the star of the play. But my mom didn't. My mom spent more vacation days taking me to child psychologists, to other teachers, to tutors, to pastors, trying to figure out what was going on that made me crave this attention. And every single one of them pretty much came down to the same thing. He's just bored. He enjoys the attention because it keeps him from having to just do nothing. And the teachers thought, no, I can never teach him. I won't be able to teach him if he acts this way. But I have to tell you, I did learn a few things. I felt like I was taught. I learned that I felt that I couldn't trust the people that were put in command of me as a small child. I became depressed, I became scared, I became skittish when someone would come near me because I thought they were going to put me in a headlock. I spent more time being afraid of the adults that were around me than actually getting to enjoy childhood. That same thing that we all see some kids that are just a little afraid because if that's what's supposed to happen when you're outside, why do you go outside? And then it did. It did teach me something because I can stand in front of you at 32 years old, never once going to jail, never once getting arrested, never once getting a speeding ticket, never once even getting a parking ticket, up until my wife just a couple weeks ago decided to do it for me. So, to that teacher, I have two things that I want to say. First off, love you. But number two, thank you.